Hello there, nerds, and welcome to Go To There, 30 Rock Podcast, a weekly chronological journey through 30 Rock, looking at the jokes, the references, the highs, the lows, and all of the blurbs that come with one of the best shows of the 21st century. As always, I'm your host, Curtis Stone, and joining me is...
David Amick.
And welcome to episode 127, season 7, episode 2, entitled Governor Dunstan, originally airing October 11th, 2012. David, if you would, please give us a quick summary slash synopsis of this episode.
Jack continues on his mission to tank NBC, but when it turns out that Tracy bears a very close resemblance to the governor of Alabama, who has replaced Paul Ryan as Mitt Romney's vice presidential pick after it turns out that Ryan was born in Kenya, the temptation to let Tracy play Governor Dunstan on TGS is too much for Liz to resist. Speaking of Liz... After Tracy's portrayal of the governor becomes so successful that Hank Hooper orders NBC to play it 5 nights a week, she has trouble figuring out when she'll have time to get pregnant, but when she tries to schedule it all out, she finds a new way to take her sexual relationship with Chris to a new level. Finally, after Jenna is gobsmacked that she's only received $90 in royalties from her summer dance jam balls, she discovers that Kenneth's mother is in town with her special friend and that they still buy music. After discovering that Ron writes songs and represents a demographic that still buys CDs, Jenna sees her way to a new avenue of fame.
No, this is all but the Kenneth mom and Ron storyline. All of this felt new to me. I'd forgotten all of this. And I think this part of it is because it was very political based, and I'm not someone till the last few years did not care about politics at all and follow any of it. Like, I get references and things like that, but like this 2012 era of politics was just so milquetoast. Like, it was just like, I didn't care for any of it. So I was just pretty oblivious to most of it. But this was like a genuinely funny like bit. Like, this whole, obviously the Governor Dunstan is very clearly Sarah Palin. Like, there's no two ways about it, and we can talk more about that when he's introduced into the episode. But yeah, this was just like, it was just super, very 30 Rock, super silly. Like, I thought it sort of nailed everything it was trying to do. Like, the fun dynamic of Jack wanting to do what he needs to do for himself, but at the expense of the Republican Party. But then tasking that on Liz is like, well, Liz, if you make fun of the Democrats, you have to keep doing something you don't want to do, but keep your, like, it's just this fun dynamic that sort of comes in at the end. And then the whole thing of Jenna being just super braggy about royalties and that blowing up in her face. And, you know, obviously Bryan Cranston and Catherine O'Hara being, and honestly, like, if we knew what Schitt's Creek was going to be 5 years after this, Catherine O'Hara should have been on this show a million times more. It's so sad that they introduced her so late into the game, because I don't think we see her again. Like, this is, I think, her only appearance. So it's just like, what a waste that they didn't use her more.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually funny. I mean, it's really two of the most iconic characters of the last 10 plus years, like Moira Rose and Walter White.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, this is in the middle of Breaking Bad being huge. So, like, yeah, to get Bryan Cranston's a huge deal. But yeah, Catherine O'Hara is like slightly before her renaissance with Schitt's Creek. I mean, she'd done like the Christopher Guest things and obviously like Home Alone and stuff, but like she wasn't really as much in the zeitgeist.
Yeah, so I think she's like an actor, like,
yeah,
within, I think, like, well celebrated like in the comedy community and mm-hmm. like those who knew her, but. Right, I mean, I mean, not that she. I mean, obviously, she was in plenty of like big things, like you said, Home Alone and Beetlejuice and stuff. So it's not mm-hmm. like she was some like indie queen or something.
But there was a period.
It's really the past couple of years where she's really blown up.
Yeah, I mean, like Beetlejuice, Home Alone, you know, was our generation when we were kids. Sort of grew up with that, but then
I think that was a little before me. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
late '80s, early '90s.
Yeah, I mean, I was like 2 years old then.
No, you weren't. You were born in 87.
Right. So I was like 2 years old in the late 90s.
Or in like 91, 92. That's five. Anyway.
Could not tell you.
Arguing semantics. But I'm saying like that's how she was sort of around in that time period. And then most of what her work was involved like Christopher Guest. We were a little bit older demographic, you know, for like the I'd say like early 20s to 30s demographic is where those movies are catered towards. So she was just a little bit of a different audience, but like seeing her come back around with Schitt's Creek and like our generation and the next generation, like sort of welcoming her back into like the comedy circles. It's great to see. I love her. I think she's great. I don't think I've seen a bad thing with her in it. She's and her, of course, her relationship with her comedy relationship with Eugene Levy is always great to see because they have a really good comedy dynamic. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the episode?
I agree. I thought it was great, and I didn't remember anything about it either, which is surprising because I mean, the whole Dunstan storyline, I mean, is not super subtle, like meta, but meta in multiple points because just obviously the concept of like playing like the vice presidential candidate character, but also the concept of like, oh, are you like playing it so funny and making it look so buffoonish that it actually doubles back around to like adorableness and actually making someone who isn't qualified like more likable, right? Which was something that obviously happened around Tina Fey's betrayal of Sarah Palin, where it was a mix of, oh my god, can you believe how stupid she is, but also like the same like
humanized,
so like almost like it dumb, but like in a almost like a, yeah, like a harmless likable way. But anyway, we'll get into that when we get to it. And I thought that I also agreed that the Jenna storyline was pretty good too. And also like Kenneth gets to play a little bit of a different note because normally he's really upbeat, but he obviously resents his mother's special friend who, spoiler alert, actually turns out to now be his stepfather. Yeah. So.
No, it is fun to see. And we've seen Kenneth be a little bit more mean in the last couple of seasons. Like he has definitely stopped being as, you know, floor mat of a character, but and this one he's the villain. Like there's not really many ways to say Kenneth is the good person. I mean, he does by the end.
He comes around,
but I mean, he's just being mean to Ron the entire, you know, three quarters of the episode just because he doesn't like him because, you know, it's not his dad's situation. It's very on the surface you can get it, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. I do think the Jenna story is a little bit weak in that they didn't utilize the strength of Bryan Cranston and Catherine O'Hara as much as I think they could have. I think if they had brought them back for more episodes, it would have been even better. But other than that, like, it's just such a small critique that it's not that it doesn't bring the episode or destroy the episode or anything like that. But it's just like, man, you got two great actors, and like they blow up and they do a fantastic job in the time they're allotted, but they could have done so much more. But any other thoughts before we hop in?
Let's hop in.
All right. So our cold open is going to help set up our Jack and Liz storylines.
Very well. I certainly appreciate your candor.
Were you just Skyping with a horse?
Not a horse, Lemon. Rafalka, Mitt Romney's champion dressage mare.
Sure.
She answers yes or no questions by eating either an apple for yes or a carrot for no. If she eats both, that means life is full of unknowable gray areas. Remarkable animal. And thanks to Rafalka, I am now fully briefed on the Romney campaign's latest setback. Did you see the news this morning?
I saw the Today Show, so I know how to make an autumn pizza that your teen will love.
Paul Ryan dropped out of the race last night.
What? Wow, why?
Turns out he was actually born in Kenya. Not a lot we could say about that one.
So who's Romney's running mate going to be?
Rafalka assured me that an announcement will be made later today, or she just wanted to eat an apple.
And how's tanking NBC going? Is Hank ready to sell?
Soon he'll have no choice. Sunday night football is just Cleveland Browns games. I'm allowing Jimmy Fallon to use his real voice. And you're certainly doing your part. Last week's show was excruciating.
Thank you. I told the writers there are no bad ideas, and they really took that to heart.
Yes, I have a reservation on the Black Hitler.
You know, I could get used to this not caring thing.
And what about your reproductive efforts?
Chris and I have been taking the dump truck to the boneyard most nights.
Oh, come on. Try to enjoy it, Lemon. Chris looks like a little elf prince.
I should get back downstairs. Show's not going to phone itself in.
I do have one concern, Lemon. Elections can be very good for sketch comedy shows. And the last thing I need is a election year ratings spike for TGS. So no political stuff.
Oh, okay. Sure. We'll just have to rely on observational humor, like, table is a weird word.
Thank you, Lemon.
And you gotta wonder who came up with the door. A bunch of cavemen sitting around. Hey, Gronk, before we starve to death in here, let's make a door.
Did you notice Gabe was back and not Jonathan?
What?
What's going on, Jonathan? You were just welcomed back so warmly last episode. Why would you leave?
Well, he found that it's the opposite of grass is greener, that coming home isn't always
the grass is not always greener on the other side, and it's not green back where you came from.
Once you leave, the grass just dies everywhere.
Oh, that's awful.
So one of my favorite moments in that scene is in the cutaway of the Black Hitler sketch, and after Tracy says that, Jenna's just like, like that's a totally normal reservation question. She's just like going to find it on the list.
Yeah, no, like there's not even, like, a laugh track or anything. Yeah. Like, it's just like, what's the joke here? Like, is the joke that it's black? Like, what's the punchline? What are we going to be getting set up for? So I want to see more of that sketch, see where it's going to go. The scene of Jimmy Fallon quote unquote using his real voice and that pitch, that hurts me. Like, I could not watch that for a full hour because it's just such a pitch that hits my ear that it's just like, I don't like I'm watching something now, and I don't know if you've heard it or not, but there's these ways, like, so it's an anime, and in a lot of Japanese culture, they will have them like laugh or snicker in a way, and it's like, this fucking thing.
Ooh.
Like, and I'm binging it, so it's like 15 episodes. This motherfucker did it so much that I was just like, I'm ready to just stop watching. Like, I literally can't take it, because it was like every line that he said, he would then snicker like that over and over. And then there was like four characters that did it, and it was just like, this isn't funny. Why is this funny? Is this entertaining to people? Who likes this? It's awful. I hate it.
But anyway. You should write a sternly worded letter to the network. Maybe they're trying to tank their network so they'll be sold off. From their corporate conglomerate overlords.
Thinking like having to sit through Jimmy Fallon doing that for a year just reminded, or
for a
hour,
year
for an hour just reminded me of that, and I was just like, I couldn't take that.
I couldn't sit through an hour of Jimmy Fallon.
You gotta get to Jimmy Fallon. He's got the greatest band in the world, The Roots.
That's true.
Well,
I just don't watch a lot of late night TV.
What is the deal with, like, what is the deal? Like, why does James Corden have such, like, a reputation? I'm not sure how to describe
it. I feel like he's very likable to...
a fault?
Middle America? I don't know.
I just feel like he has such a bad reputation. Not reputation, but he has, like, a bad... I don't know. He just has, like... I guess reputation is the best word.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like people...
Well, most people on the internet hate him, but he keeps getting jobs, which tells me that may have market research that says that, like, there are plenty of people out there who really like him. So that's
it's
my
just
guess.
Like, he's like safe and lovable.
I think so. He's
like,
British, non-threatening,
yeah,
and like
right.
vaguely comedic. So
yeah, I don't know, it seems like people hate him, and I'm like, can you tell me why? Yeah. I mean, he's never really done anything bad. He's just it's just like he's popular, but he's appealing to like a different demographic kind of thing.
I know, sure. Like, he's really unpopular, like, in Britain, like, as a mainstream thing, because I can't remember if it was he did something or said something, because he was on Gavin and Stacey, which was a pretty famous, I think, longest running by British standards sitcom. I think he was a supporting character, but I think he was a breakout anyway. Like, he started there, and I it was something around as he became more famous from there, like, apparently he just became, I don't know if it was a specific thing he said or did, but I just remember like reading an article basically about how he became very unpopular with the British public, and but somehow ended up crossing the ocean. And
right.
I can't imagine that CBS and whatever would keep giving him jobs if that was like a widespread unpopularity.
Right.
So, I mean, plus maybe it's just like a halo, whatever, from Carpool Karaoke that people like, because that's obviously super popular. I mean, that's probably what he's like. Oh, it's that guy from Carpool Karaoke. Like, he's so charming. Blah, 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 blah. I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't have an opinion either way. Like, lots of people have really, really strong opinions against him, and I haven't watched enough to, like...
Yeah.
Maybe just his demeanor is, like, so chipper.
I think he's, like, he's super cheery and upbeat and positive, but also, like, he's kind of everywhere. So I think people are just kind of turned off, like, oh, it's the guy that's everywhere and is upbeat. And I mean, it doesn't seem justified dislike of a person, but he has, like, this reputation on the internet that I can't quite understand.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's, like, the internet definitely does not reflect
the whole
widespread opinion.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So we sort of talked about it off mic, but I mean, so this aired October, so literally less than a month from
the election
happening. And a VP would never, I mean, well, I wouldn't say never, but has never dropped out close to the election.
I don't think it's been that close. There's been a couple times where, like, they've dropped out in between being announced in the actual election, but yeah. But still, I like the alternate reality where Paul Ryan has to drop out as vice president a month before the election because they just found out he was born in Kenya.
Just found out. Like, I feel like that's like...
There was a massive cover-up.
I guess so. Yeah. But yeah, like, this is one of, like, complete plot details I just forgot. Like, I forgot this. There was an arc of election coverage in 2012. I just did not remember it retaining, because I guess, like, the 2012 election was, like, it was so obvious that Obama was going to win again that it was just, like...
Yeah, it was, like...
Who cares?
There was, like, one... The first, I think it was this. The first debate where, like, Obama had a bad debate and, like, the polling, like, got close. So then that was, like, it was, like, oh, is it going to be close? And then, like, it wasn't. It was a foregone conclusion to everyone except for the Romney campaign, I guess, because apparently, like, on election night... Like, there was reporting that the campaign was, like, genuinely surprised because they thought they were going to win. And, like, not in, like, a Trump blustery way. Like, they had polling and they believed that they were actually going to win, so they were surprised.
Mm-hmm. All I remember from his run was he was lining up. I guess they were his kids or they were just some kids. But they were supposed to spell out his name, Romney. But they misaligned the kids and it just said R Money.
Oh no! And
I was like, "That's funny." Obviously, that's always a risky. But it was like a picture, so it was like it was a quick snap. But like, obviously, they would fix it. But at the time, it was just like, "Oh, I wonder what his whole campaign's about."
I say that kind of ties into his brand. That's right. Yeah, the other big thing, of course, was the binders full of women, which after the last couple election cycles seems like a very mild.
Yeah, see, that's the whole thing with, like, basically any Republican going forward is, like, the whole last 4 years with Trump was just like. That's how they're going to rebound is like, oh, I'll never get that bad again. And it's like, I mean,
too soon to tell.
At the same time, like, that's not a great, I mean, it is a good way to measure, but at the same time, like, what the fuck? Like, I don't know. Like, the problem is they're going to come back with a candidate and it's going to be like, it's not this guy. He's more like one of those guys, but it's like the guys they'll reference to
might
be like
a
Bush or something. And then it's like, the Bushes weren't great either. Neither. Stop using Reagan as sources. Yeah. Like, they're not great templates.
Meanwhile, after our cold open, Jenna has some big news for the dummies in the writer's room.
I have been waiting 7 years to tell you people what I really think of you.
Really? Because you called me Mr. Clean's gay uncle in front of my children.
This is my first royalty check from my summer dance jam, Balls.
Balls, 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 balls.
In this envelope is my cut of every CD sale, paid download, music video DVD rental at Blockbuster.
Oh boy, Jenna, you might want to look at that check before you insult us.
And maybe you ought to look in the mirror before leaving your house in the morning, because you look like someone's been slowly poisoning Sally Field.
Alrighty then.
Read it and weep, you mouth-breathing vag repellers.
It's $90, Jenna.
What? How? That song was everywhere. The FBI blamed it for a spike in summer sex crimes.
Well, the music industry isn't what it used to be.
Thanks to Al Gore's stupid internet, people could just get music for free. That's why I got out of the music business.
Despite my beautiful singing voice and my amazing songwriting.
Hey, Jenna.
Shut up. Hey, what are you doing here?
Oh, just thought I'd pop in.
No, you damn well didn't. Lunchtime is when you pop in. You got something else on your mind, son. Fresh shave, elevated pulse, cologne, This man is here to do it on the desk.
Tracy, you're disgusting.
No, Liz, he's right.
Oh, God,
no. No, but I'm not being gross. We're trying to have a baby, and you know how Liz's libido is, so I'm trying to keep it from being a chore. That's why I started tracking her menstrual cycle.
You don't have to prove anything to them. Just shut your mouth, Chris.
So you have a lot to say about the music industry, but this is your one shot.
Saying, if only Jenna could have held out for the Spotify year, she might have gotten $3 more or so. That's based true. On what I hear about streaming payout rates.
Yeah, Spotify really hadn't taken off by this. Would not have taken off by this time because it's still. It was around in 2012.
It launched, I think, summer 2011.
I mean, it had been around in the UK for a few years, but yeah, it hadn't really hit its America.
It had launched in America, but it wasn't widely used. Yeah, I mean, I think people, a decent amount of people, were actually still using iTunes to buy songs.
Yeah. Well, no, it's Apple Music now.
Well, right, but it was.
Yeah, at this time. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Yeah. But yeah, just all the rundown she has of all song downloads and song buys and music DVD, like, it probably cost you so much more to make music, like to just produce music DVDs and then rent. Like, it's just like,
I wonder,
such a bizarre.
But that's like definitely a thing that happened. Like,
no, it absolutely is. And it still happens.
I wonder how often people actually rented music videos at video rental stores.
I mean, if you're doing like a buy two or rent two, get one free, use that as your free rental. But if you're going in there on a Friday night to just rent one video and that's what you come out with, I'm curious what your home life is. Interesting.
I guess we had YouTube in 2012, but before that, like, let's say years before that, when you might have been, I mean, then you would have to, like, what, put on MTV or something?
I was thinking about that earlier. I was like, yeah, like, more than 10 years ago, if you wanted to watch a video, you really didn't have much choice of just hoping it was coming on TV at some. And even more than 10 years ago, music wasn't really played on TV, like normal cable channels anymore. So it's like, MTV obviously long abandoned music videos. So,
yeah. Although MTV Classic still plays music videos all the time, as I've discovered.
That is true.
You know, it's funny because people like say, I think people sometimes say, well, even if MTV still played music videos, what would be the point because of YouTube? But it's like, it's actually like kind of, there's a niceness in just like putting it on in the background and like not, and I guess obviously you could do like shuffle or play this on YouTube too, but it's in the way that it feels totally random where it's just, you're literally just putting it on and it's whatever someone's selecting. That can be a nice way, cause especially if it's, you know, I don't know, some song that you haven't thought about in a long time or whatever. Anyway, so I there actually is, like, I feel like a somewhat appeal of a curated thing you just turn on and don't think about.
Yeah, but I think it's so much easier and so much more varied with YouTube that it's...
Oh, for sure.
That's just the more preferred method now. And obviously a lot of artists and bands have finally recognized that in the last 10 years of creating their own brands, essentially, of YouTube, like all the Vevo stuff, and just having their own YouTube so people aren't just uploading and so they can get their royalties, which I'm all for. Like, and I've lost like 3 or 4 accounts to YouTube for just creating accounts and uploading stuff that I wanted my friends to see, because there's no, I mean, 16 years ago, the internet was a wild, wild west. Like, you couldn't find anything you wanted. I mean, you could find anything you wanted, but like, if you wanted something specific and you wanted to show it to your friends, YouTube was the best way to do it. You just upload it to your account and say, here's a thing that I found, and so much Robot Chicken.
Copyright infringer.
Oh, absolutely. So many flags on that account. It's gone now. Oh, well. But now it's relatively under control. Spotify is getting better, too, about day one releases with certain music, but some of it's still hard to find. Anyway. Also, like, the video of Balls, it looks like Jenna's just getting bored at the end. Like, she's just kind of like, is this over yet? Like, I'm just saying Balls, that's all. Like, there's no fun to this. Which, I wonder if that is the full song. It's just, that's the verse, that's the chorus, that's the hook. It's just Balls.
I mean, sounds like the perfect recipe for a 2021 TikTok hit.
Yeah, Jenna's ahead of her time again.
Yeah,
but Chris comes in looking, I looked up his filmography around this time. I couldn't see a reason why he has like a shaved or buzzed head,
It's like there was any movie that he was in that would require that. So it's a character development or character change, but all right.
He suddenly looks like younger though.
Yeah. Yeah. Like at least 5 years younger.
Yeah. Because like before, I mean, not that he and Tina Fey are like that similar age, but it's like with a fuller head of hair, like they look like fairly close in age. But like with like he looks like notably younger than her with the
he looks like
someone who's which is the reason why like I noticed it. Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're tracking my cycle?
I don't want you stressing about it, so I made this calendar. I thought you'd like to know that you're ovulating, and I came here today to, I don't know, spice things up. I know, it was stupid. I know.
No, okay, I get it. It's in the office. It's like I'm Don Draper and you're Megan. Okay, you're Don Draper. No, you're Glenn and I'm Sally. System! This is all organized. The post-its are for my ideas and the pens are for my teeth.
Liz, you have to see this.
Hornberger, what if we had been having sex?
Then I would have seen Chris's muscular back. You think I care?
The next Vice President of the United States, Governor Bob Dunston of Alabama.
Well, okie dokie do, America.
We gotta have Tracy play this guy on the show. He looks exactly like him.
And I was thinking we would just lay off the political stuff.
Well, Liz, he's right. That guy looks exactly like Tracy.
Did you guys see? I'm on TV, but now I'm old. Oh, God, Liz Lemon is happening to you, too.
Okay, fine. The guy looks like Tracy, but what's the joke?
Ooh, I'm going to have to take a moment here. I sat on my testicles earlier, and the heft of my body smashed them to smithereens.
Okay, start working on the wig.
Speaking of balls, 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 balls.
Balls, balls, balls. Ouch. Poor Governor Dunston. Yeah, I mean, he's not a great person, but, you know, feel for someone who sits on their balls. That's not a good feeling for anyone.
Another Mad Men reference, and not the last one either. Like, there's, I mean, obviously we've talked about it before, but, like, there's just, I guess Tina Fey was just super obsessed with Mad Men because there is no shortage of references, like, over the course of the entire show, basically. Well, I mean, I guess not the entire show, but since Mad Men, I guess, would have started in, what, 2008, 2009, mm-hmm. so... Once Mad Men started, like...
It would have been about its peak around this time, too.
Yeah.
Because it's only 6 seasons? 7 seasons?
7, I believe. Mm. So it's still had a few more after this. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because in the series finale, Liz says to Jack, like, don't you want to know what happens? And, like, what she says is actually way off because the finale was still a couple of years off. I mean, it was something that I think people talked about, like, that they thought might happen, but... It ended up not being close to what actually happened. But anyway, we don't need to get into it.
AMC is not a universal. Because it has its own streaming service. So I would imagine it's its own.
Gosh, it's owned by.
So it's like this kind of cross promotion of Bryan Cranston, who's big on Breaking Bad and Mad Men references. But I don't think it's. Is it a Turner? American Movie Classics. I'm not sure its affiliation.
Yeah, it's the same, I think it's in the same whatever as Sundance and IFC. Let's see. Oh, okay, it's called AMC Networks, and AMC Networks own AMC, IFC, Sundance, WeTV, and then IFC Films, yada yada. Okay, so it's used to be called Rainbow Media Holdings, so happy pride.
Super gay.
AMC Networks.
Jenna's still upset about her royalty check, but finds a new outlet in Kenneth's family.
Oh, Ms. Maroney, I want you to meet my mother.
Yeah, I'm going to stop you right there, Kenneth. I am having an actress side project crisis, so I'm not interested in whatever this is and whatever it thinks it's wearing.
Oh, I can't believe I just met Jenna Maroney. I'm so nervous. I hope I didn't embarrass you.
You were fine, but you're... Friend Ron sure doesn't know how to behave around celebrities.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Kenny. You know, the only celebrity I ever met was Evel Knievel's motorcycle. And that was just a picture.
Oh, almost forgot. We got you a little something for your birthday.
Is that a CD?
You people still buy CDs? Mm-hmm. Kenneth's mother. OMG, why haven't you visited us before?
Well, money's been tight. Ever since the market crashed into our house.
My name is Ron. I'm Perlene's friend. I've met celebrities before. Do you know Evel Knievel's motorcycle picture?
Oh, go!
Come on, Ron, I'm better than that.
I have so many questions to ask you people. Tomorrow, when we break for lunch, you are coming to my dressing room and watching me eat.
I wonder what she eats.
Kenneth's so protective. But yeah, like knowing, what's her name on Schitt's Creek? Moira. Knowing the Moira character and seeing Pearline's character and just the stark difference between the two. Like, Pearline's like very much like Kenneth, like sort of naive and like honest, but you know, joyful, whereas Moira was very just direct and emotionless for the most part. Like, seeing the same person play two drastically different characters is always fun, but like,
acting.
I know, it's acting. But yeah, I think this particular character, Catherine O'Hara, would be like close. I think the closest I've seen her in was in The Mighty Wind, Christopher Guest movie, of like that sort of down to earth, hippie like character. So it's fun. But I mean, they bury the lead that not only is Kenneth's mom in town, but it's played by Catherine O'Hara, and her friend Ron is Bryan Cranston. Like, it's just like, it's just insane that like the way they introduce them is just like slight camera pivot and slight camera pivot. Like, it's just like, what's
because I thought it was strangely heavy on guest stars for like a non premiere or finale. Mm-hmm. Because you obviously can hear in Bryan Cranston, but also then Matthew Broderick pops up again towards the end of it. So
yeah, no,
maybe just a lot of people were in town that week.
Yeah, and it's, and the Matthew Broderick's a fun cameo too, to bring him back. So
it's so random. It's like he's just in for that one scene,
and then
but maybe he was just in town, and since there was a political thing, like they thought it was a good time to.
We had a bumbling politician. Let's bring him. Yeah. Let's bring in another kind of idea.
Yeah. Also, the really funny thing about that scene, which is more visual, is after Jenna stalks off, as when she hears the unwrappings of a CD, I guess she like basically I sees her arm just shoot into the picture and grab the CD. It'd be like, you still buy CDs?
And then like then when she's hugging them to like embrace them, she immediately like the church, the CD is like famous church songs or songs of the church or something like that. But it's like she turns around and just throws it in the trash. Throws Kenneth's
what CD isn't important
in the trash and just like embraces them. It's like, oh, you're coming home. You're gonna hang out with me. And it's just like, oh my gosh. So Liz is ready to embrace the Dunstan character as a huge hit for TGS.
Before we transition, we didn't talk about Bryan Cranston at all.
Oh, okay. To talk about Bryan Cranston?
All right. I was saying, because I mean, because like you were talking about how the Pearline character is different from what you've seen Catherine O'Hara do. Like, I mean, Bryan Cranston has literally played a sitcom dad before, but he's still like what he's playing here is like a very much more like aw shucks, like
very much southern, like rural kind of character. I don't think I've seen him really play anything like that before, because like
I definitely haven't.
The Malcolm in the Middle was definitely more like a sort of towing the line, but just like a straightforward dad character, like just works middle class, lower middle class dad. I'm trying to think, what was his job? Was that like a running gag on the show? Like, you never knew what his job was?
I can't
remember. Because the mom like worked retail. What did the dad do? I think was he an associate? I remember he would always wear a tie and have a briefcase. He might have been like a sales associate or worked in the office or something. I don't know if we saw his job that much. It's been a little while. But yeah, that's I think most people now would know him as Walter White, but before that he was Hal in Malcolm. But I don't think he got a lot of awards for playing Hal. I know Jane Krakowski, or not Jane Krakowski, Jane Kaczmarek.
Yeah,
she tore up. Like, she would always win like an Emmy or two for Malcolm in the Middle. But
yeah, I think he might have gotten nominated.
Yeah,
for stuff for Malcolm in the Middle, but I don't know if he had a rush or anything. Breaking Bad, of course, obviously he won multiple awards.
Yeah, they're two stars that have done bigger on TV than they've ever done on. I don't know if Jane Kaczmarek has really done much movie work.
No.
I feel like she kind of stepped away after Malcolm in the Middle wrapped up.
Yeah.
I know she did. She's married to Bradley Whitford, right?
Perhaps.
From West Wing? Or they were married at some point. Or they were in a relationship. I can't quite remember. But I mean, let's see. Like,
yes, it said, or she was married to him from between 1992 and 2010. So
R.I.P.
They've been divorced a little
almost, while. Almost the length of their marriage.
I guess so, yeah. Yes, you're right. I don't think she's done as much recently. Bryan Cranston has moved to doing more movies the past few years because he got an Oscar nomination for something, Trumbo, a couple years ago, which was a movie that I don't think anyone saw. But
and he was the best part of the American Godzilla reboot from 2014. Spoiler, he's only in the movie like 30-40 minutes, but he was the best part of that movie. But yeah, I just think like I feel like they've had better success on TV than they've had in movies, but that's not really a necessarily metric of anything. But definitely Cats America's, she's done more TV I know of than movies, so good on them. Anything else about Bryan Cranston?
Nope.
Okay. Meanwhile, the Governor Dunstan character is doing really well for TGS, and Jack has some things to say about that.
I'm a caught on a nail here.
That was Tracy Jordan having some fun the other night at the expense of Governor Bob Dunstan.
Liz, the New York Times called. George Clooney wants to be on the show, and you got a gift basket.
Gift basket? Pears? Why?
Lemon a word.
We had an agreement. You promised not to write anything about Dunstan.
And I didn't. Every one of Tracy's lines last night was a direct quote from Governor Dunstan himself.
I see. Well, bravo.
You're supposed to say brava to a woman.
Oh, I am well aware of that. This is a disaster. Ratings are up, and now during the election, Hank Hooper wants TGS on 5 nights a week starting tonight. You are unterribilizing this network.
Wait, I have to do a show every night?
Uh-huh. Say goodbye to your free time. Did you hear that? That's the sound of honey boo-boos piling up on your TiVo.
No.
Your show is ruining my career and besmirching the name of a good American. Bob Dunstan is a fine man.
Uh-huh. So this is about politics. I'm sure you'd let us make fun of Joe Biden all we want.
Oh, but how could you? He's so amazing. He rides the train.
Liz, Dunstan's at a county fair and he ate too much chili.
I'm sorry, Jack. This is bigger than both of us.
Oh, boy. When did old Bob Dunstan swallow all this change?
That Dunstan bit there of him looking directly at the camera and asking, that means where the camera, it brings up a weird thing of like, because I mean, when you see like those like candid news footage, they're kind of far away and they're not exactly like framed well. Like this looks like they literally set the cameras up and were just filming him, so it's like, was he aware that they were there? And
he's actually an evil genius who is playing up his dumb moments for publicity.
I mean, it's working, so kudos on him, but it's just such a weird, I mean, it looks like it's the skit rather than the actual real life event. So anyway,
well, you know,
I mean, no, I know it's such a minor quibble that it's just like not worth it. But
yeah, also there's reference to the to Tina Fey playing Sarah Palin in there, where she says the thing about, you know, she didn't write anything for Tracy to say, he just repeated actual lines, which isn't entirely true in the case of Sarah Palin, because actually, like, I don't know if this is ironic, but coincidentally or whatever, there were a lot of lines directly from her that they'd used, but there were also lines that they invented that actually became stuff that people thought Sarah Palin said. Like the famous, like, I can see Russia from my house is like not something she actually said. She just made some vague reference to Alaska being close to Russia or something, so that you can keep an eye on them or just something like that. More innocuous, but everyone, well, I don't say everyone, but lots of people think she actually said that, because that's like one of the most famous lines that came out of the SNL sketches.
It's a dated sketch by far now, but like still going back to watch that, and one, how funny it is, but also like just seeing Amy Poehler and Tina Fey shine in those moments are a joy, because they just have great chemistry all together. But
it's true though, like politics always like shoots up as an ox. I remember, like, mm-hmm. I mean especially because of the Sarah Palin stuff, but just in general around that, I mean, like, I feel like people are talking about SNL and those that stuff like all the time. Like, it was like insanely popular.
Yeah, but there's been a turn on SNL in the last couple of years of, obviously, with having Trump on, sort of like, it's, I guess, the same thing Jimmy Fallon got flack for too, like tousling his hair, like they normalized him or they humanized him, and like they helped reinforce and sort of hide a lot of the horrible things he was going to say and do behind this quote unquote character that he was portraying,
making him seem adorable,
right? So it's just like they've gotten a lot of flack for doing that. So you know, you take the good with the bad kind of thing. But I mean, this was also like the whole era of, I think, like pre-election week or something, SNL would do like an election coverage series, like every week, or not every week, but like one week out of the year, of doing like sketches and bits and stuff like that. And I don't think they did it last year because of obviously the COVID stuff, but I'm sure they would have if they could. But yeah, but I think it's also like the argument of like too much too soon kind of thing. Like, all right, we didn't need this much, you know, sketch and parody. And because I think another thing with SNL is like a lot of times by when Saturday comes around, all the jokes that they're saying have been said 1,000 times before. So they're either like lukewarm jokes or they've been told better elsewhere. So it's like the timing's not quite right with SNL in the last couple of years. But anyway, we're not watching SNL.
Although, my awesome fact though, apparently SNL was the highest rated like show of the last TV broadcast, like it networked for the last TV broadcast season, because I mean, it even like was higher than like Grey's Anatomy and all the NCIS, like all the stalwarts, like, which is funny because because of yours, I guess. So like randomly on Saturday nights, but I guess it still has that live quality. Like, I don't know, people always, I guess, mostly talk about SNL to dunk on it, but even this past season, which I feel like I didn't hear that much about it, still, again, like, I guess if enough people are watching live for whatever, like, you can still be the top rated show, which is kind of crazy.
There's a rumor that A.D. Bryant, Cecily Strong, and Kate McKinnon are supposed to be leaving after this past season.
I'll be shocked if Kate McKinnon sticks around much longer.
I'm surprised she stuck around this long, but then again, like, she hasn't really had a movie career take off, so I don't know what she would transition to. I mean, she could do a TV show. Like,
Well, she's had a couple projects announced in the last year, which I think some of the stuff was delayed by COVID. Yeah,
but I mean, her and Bo and Yang are kind of carrying that show on their backs, and she's done so for the last few years. Like, she'll there's tons of sketches where she's literally like, she'll start off as Jeff Sessions and do her bit for them, and in the same, like, run off in the same sketch, come back as a completely different character, and like, and it's just like, hire someone else or like give her less work so she's not carrying the show for you. I don't know. But I mean, I don't want them three to go because they're incredibly funny, and they've been consistently strong, but at the same time, they've all been there for so long that it's like they kind of do need to move on or take some other projects, but we'll see. Anyway, meanwhile, in Jenna's dressing room, they're watching her eat, and she's eating baby food with chopsticks, which
sounds right.
Sounds very Jenna, very on brand.
Pearline, you must be so proud of Kenneth. Smell him. That's Jenna Maroney's garbage.
Oh, he's always been a special boy. I remember the day he was born. He looked up at me and he said, Mama, I am not a person. My body's just a flesh vessel for an immortal being whose name, if you heard it, would make you lose your mind. Do you remember that, honey?
Oh, he's just all so proud of Kenny. I tell everyone I meet, I know a big shot up in New York City.
Great story, Ron.
So tell me, what kind of music do you folks like to buy?
Well, Jenna, you know, times are tough.
And it's not getting any easier now that Obamacare is extending our life expectancy. Let me die in an emergency room with a treatable disease like an American.
But music can let you forget about all that. Folks like us, we need an escape. It's just like what Jimmy Buffett says. I'm just a cheeseburger in paradise.
Of course, we don't have a stereo anymore on account of our mayor, who's a meth addict, took it apart in a field. But Ron sings. He writes his own songs.
Are they about being a loser?
Some of them. But mostly they're about being on a tropical island and sipping some rum and feeling the sand between your toes.
What do you know about any of that, Ron?
Kenneth Allen Parcell, mind your manners. It just so happens Ron and I have been to Key West.
Oh, yes, we have. It was on our honeymoon. Oh, my. What? Oh.
You got married? When?
7 years ago.
Look, Ken, I'm just trying to replace your dad.
Oh, dang it. That's the wrong thing to say, isn't it?
If you will excuse me, I have to get back to work.
This is terrible. I've never gone this long without talking.
Oh, Jenna. When and what is the fascination of the Jimmy Buffett character and those, I guess now almost retirement age people finding that, to me, like, I don't know, like, it seems like it's persisted for the last 20, 30 years of, like, Cheeseburger in Paradise, that whole idea of just taking it easy. Like, when did that become such a thing?
I mean,
that so many people, like, aspire to it? But to me, it's just, like, that's so base level that it's just, like, all right, I wouldn't stop someone. I wouldn't take it away from someone, but it just seems like it's so cliched at this point that it's just like, really? Can we find like an alternative or like a new way of doing that? I mean, it just seems so base. Like, just the, like, I mean, like the way he describes it of just like sitting on the beach, toes in the sand. Like, it's just like, really? That's an aspiration for some people?
I mean, but isn't that like fan base, like basically a lot of like Midwest Southern, like blue collar people who have probably been working physical jobs. So it's like,
yeah,
the appeal of like, oh, just relax and retire and not have to worry about. I mean, literally, there are like Jimmy Buffett, Margaritaville branded retirement communities in various places now. So, I mean, it's sort of thing where it's someone who built like his, as a singer, built his brand around that whole carefree thing and, I mean, just monetized it into other business ventures, I guess. I mean, I don't know, like, I mean, yeah, I guess it's basic, but I mean, I don't know, like, I mean, I don't know, like, everyone is, well, most people plan to retire eventually and want leisure, so it's just, like, the fantasy.
We're not gonna get there.
Well, speak for yourself. but I mean, I don't know, like, I mean, just the general idea of leisure after, you know, I don't know, you spend your whole time working, yada, yada, yada. Right, I mean, yes, it's not anything complex, but it's...
I mean, it's also, it's just kind of like, it feels like it's tied into capitalism so hard of like...
Oh, for sure.
You work 30, 40 years at a job, and then finally you get to relax, and it's like, well, you should take relaxation in between those 30, 40 years, too, and it's like, it seems like, no, the goal is you work 30, 40 years, and then finally you can relax, and it's just like, yeah, I've never really subscribed to that idea of living and working so hard that you can finally relax when you can take relaxation in between. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not endorsing it. It just, I don't think
I know.
It's that.
I know, but just to me, it's so cliche now. And we're going to see it again in a couple episodes with the Unwind Relax that obviously inspires Jenna here to continue that brand. But it still is just like, I guess it's the aesthetic of it. Why hasn't there been another version of like what's ours gonna be? Like, I don't think our generation is gonna subscribe to the Jimmy Buffett margarita cheeseburger in paradise stuff. So it's like,
well, I mean, that's it. But well, we'll have to see how the world is when our generation reaches retirement age, right?
Yeah,
I mean, because some may not anymore. And
but like, what's our generation's retirement aspirations, like mountains or beach?
Well, I mean, we're still at the age where the thing is millennials still can't afford to buy houses, so we're not
we're not thinking 30 years ahead, we're thinking three yeah. months ahead.
I don't know, like, what's a similar cultural touchstone for, not necessarily just retirement, just in general, like a millennial, like, cultural touchstone that, like, has a sort of, like, brand, or not brand, but just like generational
brand.
Vibe. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I
like,
think for
like
college,
like breweries, like, I, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I feel, well, I mean, that's, I mean, that that's a little whatever. That's more of a,
but I think our generation is embracing
white
like
people
craft
thing.
Beers.
Not that,
yeah, it's
not
true.
That non-white people don't like breweries, but I feel like it's a very like I don't know, like, white person stereotype, like, small, well, I guess in a way, like, the whole, like, authentic, like, personal experience, like, small, bi, local, organic, yada, yada, yada. I feel like that's sort of, like, the millennial cultural
pastiche
touchstone, yeah.
I don't know. I guess just, like, travel in general is, like, the millennial thing, but, I mean, like, for our parents, I feel like it was... Or rather, our parents' parents was you travel the United States in an RV.
Yeah.
And you don't really do that anymore. And
well,
like our parents are going to be like the Jimmy Buffetts. So, like, I'm not sure what our generation's Jimmy Buffett is going to be. And that's what I'm going to be curious to see if it's just constant travel or if it's like a location.
Or it could be work till you die because you can't retire.
And that's what my fear is. But,
okay.
Anyway.
Well.
Fingers crossed we never get that far. I don't know, like, it's just, I don't know, the whole Jimmy Buffett thing to me is like so passe that I'm like over it, but again, wouldn't take it from someone, but
yeah. One thing I want to talk about quickly is like how throughout this episode, like, Kenneth very much reverts to his like childhood self, because there's like so much little like eye rolling and like mini tantrum throwing, like, oh, whoa,
and like, yeah, under his breath muttering,
yeah, exactly.
Ron and
yeah.
things like that. But I mean, what I do like about Pearlene, which, god, what a great
Pearlene.
Like, that she doesn't enable him, like, she
That's
calls
true.
Him out and she's like, stop, like, what are you doing? But then the reveal that they've been married since essentially he came to, as far as we know, he's come to New York, they've been married the entire time, is a fun reveal,
yeah.
too. And then the line that Ron has, I'm trying to replace your dad, like, no, wait, I'm not supposed to say that. It's just like, it's a cherry on the icing of everything else, that it's just like, oh man,
he just doesn't know how to act around celebrities.
That's true. So I guess I don't know. Yeah, so I guess Liz discovers a new fetish in organizing, which it's weird that she just now, because I mean, in the scene earlier with Chris comes in and he knocks everything off her desk, she goes, no, those are all for organizing. So we know she's got an eye for organizing, but I guess it's like the workload that...
Well, it's because she's explicitly connecting work with like sex, because she's organizing her schedule in order to plan when she can have sex when she's ovulating. So it's the first time I think they've been so closely connected. Yeah.
I don't know. So she discovers a new fetish that she didn't know she had and embraces it. Meanwhile, we get Cooter Burger in our third cameo of Matthew Broderick, you know, the guy that killed people.
Cooter? Cooter Burger?
Hi, Jack. I took the liberty of making myself a drink.
Is that red wine with tonic water and olives in it?
Yep. It's an old Spanish. Is that not a thing? Ah, oh, the guys at the office told me it was a cool drink. I'm always getting pranked. Anyway. Ow.
What have you been up to?
Well, after 2008, I went back to being a lobbyist. You know, just hanging out in hotel lobbies. If you wear a red vest, sometimes people think you're a valet and you can take a nap in their car.
Right. Well, it looks like you're, back on your feet.
And how? You're looking at the Deputy Chief of Media Relations, Romney Dunstan, 2012. Here, have a sticker.
Cooter, this is a puffy frog with googly eyes.
Oh, no. Been handing those out all day. Listen, Jack, the reason I'm here, we need to talk about this whole Bob Dunstan TGS thing.
Yes, I'm taking care of that. I assure you, there will be no more Bob Dunstan sketches on TGS.
No, that's not what we want. We need you to make fun of Dunstan as much as possible.
What? Why?
Because it's making him likable. He's actually very mean, but with Tracy Jordan playing him...
He's a lovable buffoon.
Exactly. Nobody's talking about the governor's record.
His resegregation of the Alabama schools, his longtime sexual relationship with the Hank Williams statue outside Montgomery City Hall.
They're just talking about how funny Tracy is. It's a win-win. You help us take back the White House, and you goose NBC's ratings.
Yes, and I do want NBC to get good ratings.
Yeah, I know. Let's keep saying things we want. A closer friendship with you that includes road trips. Your turn.
Poor Cooter Burger. He tries so hard to be someone's friend.
Yeah. It's really funny, though, how it was, like, literally a one-time, like, guest role a few years ago. And it's, like, a few years later, same just, like, a little one-scene pickup. And it's, like, still, like, to maintain the character, like, that way, like, years
yeah.
apart from really only one episode is
yeah. I mean, you could say, like, well, he only had, like, one setup and, like, not much escalation, so like they didn't have to try hard to match that, but it's still, yeah. I mean, like,
true, but his demeanor is like immediately,
it's like perfect, yeah. Like, yeah, like just the small things of like him still being bullied and like people telling him that this drink exists that's not actually a thing. What was it? Tonic Spanish. Water?
Tonic water and olives. Olive and red wine.
Oh, God. Oh, that's just... That he should have known terrible. Better.
I
but then, like, even more kicking at him when he's down, when he's like, I'm a lobbyist, but which means I just stand in hotel lobbies. And if you're wearing a vest, they might think you're a valet and you can sleep in the car. Like, it's just like, this guy's life is awful. But he's still so upbeat. He's still like, he's like a Kenneth. Like, he's like a Kenneth in Washington. That's like, true. He's just like, whatever life throws at me, but he's just so upbeat. And just that kicker at the end of, let's just keep saying things we like about each other. Or we want to, like, things that we like. And it's just like, more trips together with road trips. It's more hanging out together with road trips. It's just like, God, the desperation is so strong.
Poor Cooter.
Poor Cooter Burger. So we're starting to wrap up our storylines. Pearline and Ron meet with Jenna, who's trying to write a new song.
Jenna, can we trouble you for some advice?
Yes. If you're only in New York for a few days, find a way to see Amari Stoudemire's penis. It's worth it.
All right, but we'd like to talk to you about Kenny.
He won't speak to me.
Don, Garlene, I don't have time for this. I'm trying to write a new album for the only people who buy records anymore. Unhappy, middle-aged bummers like you. This writing is hard. Wait, you said you write songs?
Yes, I do, but I'm not a professional like you or them bears at Showbiz Pizza.
Well, sing one for me now, for inspiration. I'm not going to steal it. But if I do, don't even bother lawyering up. I'll have my Jews on you so fast you'll think you're an Asian girl.
Well, okay. I wrote this song earlier today for Kenny. You know, I just hope someday he'll realize. Okay. There's a picture on my wall of a boy who's just yay tall. Without a daddy, he's in danger. He needs an older male stranger. And when he goes to war...
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. Ron, that was terrible. I'm going to be constructive here. You should kill yourself.
No, he should not. I am sorry, Ms. Maroney, but you don't talk to Ron like that.
What are you talking about? I've heard you call Ron a dingleberry.
Comparing Ron to our inconsiderate neighbors, the dingleberries, is something I can do. But you are not allowed to, because you are not a part of our family.
That's what family is, Kenneth. People you badmouth all the time behind their back. While on the train ride up here, I called you a bowling pin with a face drawn on it. A cheap albino lesbian. A finger with teeth. A hummus someone left on the radiator.
I get it, Mom.
But if anyone else says a word about you, Kenneth, I don't stand for it. Do you remember that kid in school who bullied you? Well, I ate that goat because you and I are family. And like it or not, Kenneth, so are you and my husband, Ronald McDonald.
I think I just got an idea for a song. It's called Rum-Soaked Tampon. Now, what were you guys talking about?
Oh, Jenna, being oblivious as ever. I mean, that reveal of Ron's name being Ronald McDonald.
So silly.
Like, I don't know, like it was fresh then. And it's still funny, but also, like, there was an episode of Always Sunny where the character Mac, for the entire series had gone by Mac. We didn't really know anything else about him. But if they go to their high school reunion, and they're getting their name tags, and we learn that his Mac is just like the first part of his last name. We learn his first name is Ronald, and his last name is McDonald.
Oh, so brother.
It's like the same joke, but yeah. He's obviously super embarrassed by it because he wants to be known as Ronald McDonald. But now it's like, man, I wonder how many writers have written that joke, comedy writers have written that joke and have tried to make it work in some sort of capacity.
Seven writers.
Seven, that's a good number. Not a great number. It's a good number. So to wrap up Liz's storyline, we get like a montage of her and Chris doing sexy things.
In the Office Supply Store.
In the Office Supply Store. And we have Cindy from Orange is the New Black as the retail employee tells him to get out. Because they're doing it in the middle of the store, which...
Gross.
It's funny visuals because, like, he's pouring paper clips on her and she's, like, rubbing white out on him. And they find, like, a stool and do, like, the pottery scene from Ghost, but they do it with a spindle of CDs. Like, it's just, like, it's a 30 rock joke.
So do people still buy CDR, like, blank CDRs? I guess they must, but, like, what would you use them for these days?
I think I'd finally gotten rid of them, but I'd had some when we first moved in, because at the time, they were leftovers because the laptop I'd had before, I was able to burn CDs to, and I didn't have an MP3 player that would connect to Bluetooth in my car at the time. So, like, CDs was the only way I was able to listen to music. And then when I built my PC, I had a CD, like, DVD player, but I didn't hook it up right, so it never worked. And then it's recently started working, but, like, I've never had to burn a CD or anything like that. So, like, I know they still sell them, but I'm not sure. I feel like it's a very, it's like a cassette thing for people our generation. It's like, this is how we got new. Because there was a coworker I had a couple of years ago who burnt us actual, like, mixtapes for our little group at work, to discover new music. I thought that was kind of cool, but at the same time, like, if I didn't have that computer, I literally would have no way of listening to it, because we don't have a CD player. I guess your computer CD drive works, right? Maybe.
You know what? No, I have a separate USB DVD plugin.
Yeah,
so but I've never actually used it. So, but yeah. Theoretically, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I feel like it's definitely like not as prominent as it once was. But man, I used to buy those things more often than I should have. I should have really invested in, like, a storage, like a hard drive in the end. For all of those things are just DVDs. Like, there's 30 Rock seasons in there of just DVDs that I didn't have storage for, so I would just put them on blank DVDs. God. Quality on those are probably so shitty too. Yeah. To answer your question, I don't know, but I guess, like, offices might still use them to store data. Because I know where I worked previously, they would back up documents and stuff onto, like, DVDs and CDs. It's in lieu of, like, just having paper, they would just have it all, because you could fit more. But probably more people than you think, but for music purposes, probably not that many, but I don't know.
Let's
do a survey. Survey Monkey, is that the thing?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll just do one of those. But meanwhile, on the 30 Rock TGS stage, Liz and Jack are at an impasse about what to do with Tracy's character. Do they support the Democrats, hate the Republicans, or vice versa?
2 minutes to air.
Lemon, where have you been? You have a show to do.
Don't worry about the show. It's all scheduled. Look at this. Oh, yeah. Mommy like.
What's wrong with you?
I've solved my intimacy issues, Jack. Now that the show is on every night, everything has to be organized. Wie ein Wochentag Düsseldorf Busfahrplan.
Well, congratulations. I just want to make sure that you're doing a Bob Dunstan sketch tonight.
Why?
Because of the First Amendment, which I love. And what you told me earlier, you convinced me. You win.
You think I'm an idiot? I didn't win that argument. I'm an idiot.
Lemon, what do you want me to say? You're helping the Romney-Dunstan ticket, okay? People like Dunstan because they like Tracy.
What? No! If these sketches are helping Romney, we're not doing them.
Yes, maybe that's for the best. The success of your show is the only thing keeping Hank from selling NBC. And if he doesn't sell, I'll spend the rest of my career in corporate obscurity like a woman with children. Damn it. If I don't help Romney, it's 4 more years of socialism, corporations not being people in a basketball court at the White House.
Let me make your choice easy, Jack. It's over.
Yes, but is it that easy? You stop doing Dunstan, TGS goes back to one night a week. You can kiss goodbye your Dusseldorf bus schedule sex. You'll be having Paris metro sex. Long sessions of afternoon lovemaking followed by talking and making circles with your finger in Chris's chest hair.
No, you can't make me.
Do the sketch, I help Romney, but I ruin my career. Cut the sketch, you help Obama, but you screw up your life plan.
win-lose.
Tracy to the floor for the cold open.
So what are we going to do?
Break a leg, Trey.
That shouldn't be hard. I have a severe calcium deficiency.
What's gonna happen?
I guess we'll have to wait and see. Man, Tracy's wig in this sketch reminded the whole time we first watched it and in the recording, I was like, I've seen that hairstyle somewhere and I could not place it. And then it just clicked for me. There was a character he would do on SNL. He only done it like a handful of times, but it was called Woodrow, and it was a homeless man that he would play. And he always lived like, he lived in the sewer, and it was like when they would have like a big celebrity guest on. Like, I think one time they did Britney Spears, and then another time they did it with someone else. But like, he was very much a character of like, you know, don't feel bad for me. Like, I'm making the best of my situation. But he was also like not all there, so he would say like silly things to make you laugh. But like, that's where that wig inspiration has hit me. Let's see if I can find it so you can see it. I mean, the wig and the skit is a little bit more disheveled and has things in it. Like, you kind of expect a homeless person, or not expect, but you would think a homeless person might look like, kind of thing. Oh. It's a little bit more of an afro in that one, but it's very much similar, kind of poofed out hair. Yeah, but that's the whole thing. I was like, what does that hair look like? What does it look like? And then it's, what is the Woodrow character? It's a funny bit that he has, especially the one that he does with Kenan Thompson, where Kenan's playing his Willie character. And the Willie character is basically just like oblivious. Like, he's not sure the awful things that he says are actually awful. Like, there's one where he's like, we used to, when we would go Halloween trick-or-treating, we would go up to Mr. Dahmer's house and he would just give away candy. Like, he was oblivious who Jeffrey Dahmer was, even in an old age. He's like, why, like people would start laughing or they start groaning when he says something. He's like, why, what's wrong? Like, do you guys know Mr. Dahmer? Like, he would just say things, like, that was his character bit. And so, like, him and Woodrow had a little, and it's essentially the same character of just, like, being upbeat or oblivious to kind of things. But anyway. But yeah, that's Governor Dunstan. Still super funny. Like, it's a great episode. Kind of, I'm mad at myself for completely forgetting about most of it.
How
just because
could you?
How funny it is. But yeah. Final thoughts on Governor Dunstan before we say adieu?
Yep, I agree. It was a really good episode.
Great job. Call it a night. Wrap it up.
No, I was trying to work in some reference to they should have replaced Paul Ryan with Danny, but I couldn't get there. Although at least it would have put Danny on the show in some capacity.
It's true. If maybe like Paul Ryan looked like Danny, they could have had Danny play the character or something. All right. Well, as always, if you like what we're doing, rating and reviewing and all that fun stuff, it's going to be the best way to help us out. Otherwise, we will see you in next week's episode 128, Season 7, Episode 3, entitled Stride of Pride, wherein Jack develops a new relationship strategy based on the principles of the movie The Great Escape, and Liz tries to prove that women are funny, and a tabloid reveals that Jenna is 56 years old. Oh no, what's gonna happen then? Dave, take us out.
See you next time.
Gwen, I'm glad you brought up my record. It's called Sounds of Seduction, and it's available on iTunes. There are 9 types of legitimate rape. 1, a Halloween party. Let me ask you a question, sir. Do you know if this auditorium validates pocking? Our opponent would like you to believe that Mitt Romney is a merman. Now, I know Mitt Romney does not live in the sea.
No Mormon, Governor.
A Mormon? Now, that's crazy.
Ron, that was terrible. I'm going to be constructive here. You should kill yourself.